This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. U.S. President Donald Trump is in Western Europe after meetings in London. The British royal family and prime minister spent the next 2 days commemorating the Allied invasion of Normandy, a major event of World War II. The AP's Charles Della Desma reports.
Following the focus on business and trade, Donald Trump will use the next 2 days to mark the 75th anniversary of the June 6, 1944 D-Day landing, likely the last significant commemoration most veterans of the battle will see. The events will begin in Portsmouth, England, where the invasion was launched, and then move across the Channel to France, where Allied forces began to recapture Western Europe from the Nazis. Charles de Ledesma, London.
President Trump said he's more likely than not to impose a new 5% tariff on import products from Mexico next week. Trump believes the tariffs may be an incentive for Mexico to curb Central American migrants from traveling through Mexico to reach the U.S. Democratic Senator Dick Durbin sees the tariffs hurting American consumers and farmers.
There will be an impact on the price of goods coming back and forth between the United States and Mexico that is going to raise prices on consumers, it's going to cost American jobs, and frankly, it's going to hurt my farmers, to be very blunt with you, who have taken a beating already with this war with China over trade.
Trump has threatened to increase the tariffs monthly in 5% increments if the migration is not curbed. The Democratic Republic of Congo is treating more than 2,000 cases of the Ebola virus. The health ministry said just over 500 people have been cured of the virus. The ministry update says the fight against the deadly virus is being helped by improved security and a containment of the disease. For more news, as always, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com or the VOA mobile app. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. In Sudan, pro-democracy activists rejected a plan by military leaders to hold elections within 9 months. Tensions in the streets of the capital, Khartoum, remained high a day after security forces stormed the activists' main protest site outside the defense ministry in central Khartoum, breaking up an 8-week-old sit-in, killing at least 35 people. The military has been in charge since forcing the removal of longtime President Omar al-Bashir from office in April. A spokesman for the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres said the UN is watching the situation with great and increasing concern. The U.S. House Judiciary Committee subpoenaed former aides of President Trump in the Russia probe, but the White House appears to be standing in the way of the aides cooperating with the committee. The AP's Jackie Quinn has more on the story.
House Judiciary Committee Chairman Gerald Nadler says his committee issued subpoenas for former White House aides Hope Hicks and Annie Donaldson, but the White House has instructed them not to turn over any materials. Both women are mentioned frequently in the special counsel report, but White House counsel Pat Cipollone says they don't have the right to turn over those materials. He cites, in part, executive privilege. Congressman Nadler says Hicks agreed to provide some documents from the presidential campaign, and he says the president has no lawful basis for preventing the witnesses from cooperating. His committee holds a hearing next week on whether President Trump committed obstruction of justice in the Russia investigation. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
U.S. Democratic presidential frontrunner Joe Biden announced his long-awaited plan to fight climate change if he wins the White House next year.
My plan calls for, it's a staggering number to use in a state like mine in Delaware, but $1.7 trillion investment over the next 10 years and to ensure that this country is 100% clean energy economy, net zero emissions by 2050.
Biden says the money to pay for his plan would come from repealing President Trump's corporate tax cuts and eliminating federal subsidies to oil and gas companies. Biden would offer tax incentives to help stimulate investment into green technology and reinvigorate blue-collar manufacturing jobs to take the place of lost fossil fuel industry jobs. News reports say the younger sister of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has reappeared in public for the first time in nearly 2 months amid questions about her status and whether she and other prominent officials had been purged. The report said Kim Yo-jung attended North Korea's mass games, which attracted political and military leaders on Monday. For more news, join us at voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown here in Washington, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, June 5th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. The UN Security Council meets on Sudan amid renewed military attacks on protesters.
We need urgently a return to the negotiating table. Legitimacy cannot come from the barrel of a gun.
Christoph Hosgen is the German ambassador to the United Nations. Human Rights Watch calls for justice for Sudan victims. Malawi's president urges restraint after opposition supporters storm a building housing the offices of the president and government departments. Church leaders in Uganda and Kenya say LGBT principles contravene Christian religious values. And Liberian police say they are ready to provide security for this Friday's anti-government protest.
We can show the general public that the police will conduct itself in a very orderly manner to ensure that they respect the rights of our citizens in accordance with law.
Patrick Sudu is Inspector General of the Liberia National Police, and we'll have a report about a natural gas scandal allegedly involving Senegalese President Macky Sall's brother. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Security Council met Tuesday to discuss the situation in Sudan, where security forces broke up weeks of protest against military rule and resulting in the death of nearly 40 people, and also where the military council announced it will conduct elections within 9 months. Christoph Hosgen is the German ambassador to the United Nations.
We are extremely worried about the situation on the ground. We saw over the last weeks and months a peaceful process where the Transitional Military Council and the Forces for Transition and Change were negotiating a transfer and a peaceful transfer which would lead to a civilian government. We have seen this abrupt change. We have seen the military interventions that led to numerous victims, death, and also many injured. We are grateful for the Secretary General, who has given a strong statement. The Chairman of the African Union has done the same. We need urgently a return to the negotiating table. Legitimacy cannot come from the barrel of a gun, but has to be achieved again in the process. It's a long one, it's a, maybe sometimes a painful one, but there is no alternative to civilian-led government. So in so far, we do support what the Secretary General, what also the African Union has asked for. And again, we want this in the Security Council. We want to raise attention on the situation we find quite worrying.
The Transitional Military Council said that they would be organizing elections. What do you think of that?
Elections are good, but elections have to be well prepared. We know that the basis for elections right now in Sudan are not there. There are no lists. This has to be done. There are no parties. So this is why the objective was to have a transitional government whose composition was just being debated, and then prepare maybe in several years. But right now to call for snap election is to deny democracy.
Christoph Hosgen is the German ambassador to the United Nations. Human Rights Watch has called for urgent international action and accountability to stop further violations in Sudan, where security forces Tuesday broke up weeks of protest against military rule, resulting in the death of nearly 40 people. Yehen Henry, Associate Africa Director at Human Rights Watch, says violence against peaceful protesters is unjustified and unlawful. She urges UN member countries to establish an independent investigation into the killings.
We think dozens have been killed. By the end of the day, yes, the figure we had was 35, but people are saying it's higher because there were more killings today, and some of them were in parts of the city that were far away from the protester sit-in. So the transitional government's excuse that this was some sort of law enforcement operation is totally unfounded, and this type of force against the protesters could never be justified. So I think it's important that the international actors who are thinking about Sudan and who will be meeting in the Security Council, the members, they should all be very clear that this is not accepted behavior. It's not an accepted response to popular protests.
Jehan, what sort of action do you think the international community can take short of just issuing statements from the UN Security Council?
Well, the UN Security Council and the African Union's Peace and Security Council are the two bodies that can make decisions beyond just making statements. They can impose individual sanctions on people responsible for violence against civilians. The AU, of course, has already talked about wanting to suspend Sudan because of the coup. And in fact, it was the AU deadline that was putting pressure on the parties to negotiate a civilian-led transition. The UN Security Council will likely take cues from the AU and vice versa. They talk to each other, of course. The Security Council can also impose sanctions. It can impose follow-up actions. Human Rights Council in Geneva can authorize an independent investigation into what has happened since December if it wants to. It can go back in time since the protest movement really started and was initially violently cracked down upon.
Do you think the protesters overstepped a boundary, or did they push the military so far? Because it's kind of surprising that all of a sudden this thing has turned violent. Could it be that the protesters maybe, some people say they were given a lot by the military and they refused to accept that?
Well, the protesters are not armed. They were staying in tents near the military headquarters. And of course, the Military Transitional Council did use the excuse of saying, oh, well, there are criminal elements. And of course, it would not justify using the kind of lethal force that they use.
Jehan, thank you very much again. We are always happy to speak with you.
Thank you so much.
Jehan Henry is Associate Africa Director at Human Rights Watch. She was speaking with me from New York. A spokesman for Malawian President Peter Mutharika says the president has again appealed to well-meaning Malawians to exercise restraint after supporters of the opposition Malawi Congress Party on Tuesday took over a building housing the offices of the president and other government departments. They were calling for the resignation of President Mutharika, who they say rigged the May election to win re-election. Presidential spokesman Mgemi Kalalani says that President Mutharika understands the disappointment of losing an election, but he says resorting to violence is not the way.
His Excellency the President, Professor Thabito Mutharika, understands that under our constitutional framework, Malawians have got the right to peaceful demonstration at any time when they feel they have an issue to protest about. More so, the President understands that we're coming from an election and the opposition has lost the election. So the emotions are well understood by His Excellency the President, but what is disappointing, pockets of violence and chaos that are also characterizing the demonstration. That part is causing concern with the President, and he has talked to the leadership of the opposition in the country to try as much as possible to restrain their supporters. But the president, it is not in his interest to use security force to restore discipline on the people.
But yet the demonstrators have called for the president to resign because they say that he was elected through a rigged election.
I think that should also be understood in the context of the background where we're coming from. We're coming from an election period, and they were contesting in an election. And they have lost, of course, with a slim margin. So it is not surprising that perhaps they have chosen to react to their loss by asking for the president to resign. But how do you go about asking a person to resign who has just beaten you in an election in about 5 days ago?
The opposition Malawi Congress Party, according to the story here, is that some of the protesters were wearing the regalia of the Malawi Congress Party. Yeah. And we know that the Malawi Congress Party is challenging the results.
Yes, exactly, yes. And that's one thing that even commentators here are wondering. We have the rule of law in this country and an independent judiciary. The Malawi Congress Party has taken to the court challenging the electoral results. I think they're petitioning for something like a nullification or something like that. Then one wonders why then they are mobilizing their supporters also to be going on the streets and cause mayhem. But the other route they are choosing to take, mobilization of their supporters and to disturb public order in the city center, we don't think it is the wise thing to do. One would imagine if all supporters of respective parties were out in the streets, there would be bloodshed there. And the president has told his supporters not to take to the street. Understand that we are in a democracy, and to understand that it doesn't make sense to destroy public infrastructure because one is bitter because he has lost an election.
Thank you very much again, sir. It's so nice to talk with you.
Thank you so much.
Ngeme Nkililani is spokesman for Malawian President Peter Mutharika. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. Today is Wednesday, June 5th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. We'd like to send shout-out to listeners on these our VOA affiliate station, Radio Banga, FM 96.5 in Bong County, Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi, and Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. As Uganda celebrated the country's Martyrs' Day this week, the head of the Anglican Church in Kenya, Archbishop Jackson Ole Sapit, and his Ugandan counterpart, Archbishop Stanley Untagale, said they will work with their counterparts in Europe and the United States on lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender LGBT matters. As Mungumi Davis-Rakarish reports from Kampala, the clergy say LGBT values contravene Christian religious principles.
The Uganda Martyrs are a group of both Anglican and Catholic Christians that were executed on orders of a local king in Uganda between 1885 to 1887. It is commemorated every 3rd of June. While speaking at this event, Archbishop Jackson Ole Sapiti, the head of Anglican Church in Kenya, called on Christians not to embrace LGBT practices.
LGBTQ agenda is being pushed to the church and to the society as a new thing to be embraced. And they say they want to be ordained in the church, they want to be married in the church. I don't know if they will be married with their dogs in the church.
Archbishop Stanley Ntagali of Uganda agrees. Ntagali says the Anglican Church leadership in Uganda will not attend the Lambeth Conference taking place sometime next year in the United Kingdom.
The Church of Uganda resolved that we are not going to Lambeth 2020 because we can't move with people we don't agree with, and Kenya has joined the same. The liberals can stay with their money and we stay with our faith.
The Lambeth Conference, which takes place every 10 years, dates back more than 150 years ago and attracts Anglican church leaders from all over the world. The conference addresses social religious issues such as the plight of refugees, racism, sexuality and marriage. Ntagali applauded the recent Kenyan High Court ruling that upheld laws that criminalize gay sex.
The High Court of Kenya also defended that and did not want to listen to the people who wanted that homosexuality should be allowed in Kenya. Thank you for standing firm, and we want to thank God for that great move.
LGBT persons in Uganda and most parts of Africa face legal challenges not usually experienced by non-LGBT citizens. Both male and female homosexual activities are considered illegal in most parts of Africa. Amnesty International has reported cases of rising homophobia for LGBT people in Africa. For VOA News, Aya Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
The Liberian government says it is committed to providing security for the June 7th anti-government protest. The assurance came Tuesday at a meeting between government officials and the Council of Patriots, organizers of the protest. Organizers say the protest, dubbed Save the State protest, is being called to express concerns about Liberia's current worsening economic situation and corruption. Tuesday's meeting was observed by the UN resident coordinator, the African Union ambassador, and the special representative of the Economic Community of West African States. Patrick Sudu is the Inspector General of the Liberian National Police.
We are prepared, and we can assure the general public that the police will conduct itself in a very orderly manner to ensure that they respect the rights of our citizens in accordance with law.
There are concerns, Mr. Inspector General, about the number of days that the protest might last. Do you have enough police officers to deal with the protest?
Well, as it relates to the number of days, We had a meeting with protesters, the hierarchy of the protesters, and they assured members of the international community that were present in the meeting that they will present their petition and leave the street. So as far as we're concerned, up to today's date, we met and the state stand by their word and we hold them by their word. He said after the presentation, they will be leaving the street.
Do you have any plan in terms of what routes or streets in Monrovia that the protests are supposed to cover? As you know, mobility is very difficult in Monrovia, then coupled with, say, hundreds of people protesting.
Thank you, sir. According to the request made to the Justice Ministry by the Council of Patriarch, they requested that the government give them the opportunity to march according to the 1986 Constitution, Article 17, which gives them the right to assemble peacefully and in an orderly fashion also. And since they want to talk to government, we allow them to go to the front of the Capitol building. They can assemble at the front of the Capitol building and give in their petition. They assure us that there will be no march in the principal street of Monrovia, but they only ask that we allow their members to use certain routes to get to the point of concentration. Yes, of course, those are coming from the PNG belt. The police will lead them across the Jonathan route to take them to the Capitol building area. And those are coming from across the bridge will also guide them through the Great Tucker Bridge, passing through Central Moravia to get to the point of assembly. We also told them that in a much the government gave them the opportunity to exercise the franchise under Article 17 of the Constitution. They too are protesters. They should observe the rights of owners under Article 13 of the Constitution, because Article 13 of the Constitution calls for freedom of movement. So if you have them to be on the street for more than one day, definitely they will be infringing on the rights of owners. And the owners see that well. I think we have had a second thought that after the presentation by 3 o'clock, the presentation, according to them, will be made 3 o'clock on the 7th, after which time they will dispatch on the street.
When the UN envoy, Mohammed Ibn Chambers, visited Monrovia, he expressed concern about the protests going beyond or lasting a number of days and whether the Liberian police or security forces had the means to cope. That's why I ask whether you have the means a
when
day or so.
To June 7, this is a national security issue, so it's not only left with the police. This is a joint security operations. We have some other security apparatus that are assisting the police in ensuring that the march goes very peacefully. So it's not only the police that will be part of that particular exercise, but we'll have them of the joint security also forming part of that particular thing.
Some Liberians have been expressing concern, saying that, oh, they protest should not take place because protests in Liberia have never been peaceful. What do you say to them?
I can assure you from the angle of the government, the joint security, I'm being the head of the joint security, I can assure you that the Liberian National Police, a member of the joint security, will definitely ensure that there will be law and order. So it is in the spirit that we talk to the Council of Patriarch that they should conduct themselves. Once they conduct themselves orderly, definitely the protests will go very peacefully, because the Liberian National Police and other security apparatus are going to ensure that their rights be observed and the rights of others will also be observed. So we can assure the general public, we can assure our brothers and sisters in the diaspora that we will do everything humanly possible to ensure that this demonstration will go on very peacefully. The Liberian National Police will in no way, form or manner, suppress or claim on their own citizens or beat on their citizens.
Inspector General Sudu, thank you very much. We are so happy to speak with you.
Thank you, sir.
Patrick Sudu is the Inspector General of the Liberian National Police. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. A BBC report alleges fraud in 2 major offshore gas block deal made by the Senegalese government. The report alleges that BP agreed to pay Timis Corporation, a company run by Romanian-Australian tycoon Frank Timis, around $10 billion in royalty payments for its stake in the blocks. In addition to the astronomical royalties information that has come to light, President Macky Sall's brother is also implicated in the allegedly fraudulent deal. AfriTV Minister member Aisha Dabo speaks to Ricky Stryak about local reaction and calls for an investigation into the BP deal.
It is also mentioned that the president's brother, Aliou Sall, was working for Frontinus as a consultant and was paid 25,000 per month over a period of 5 years, which is $1.5 million. And it was also indicated that at some point, the Frontinus company paid what was supposed to be tax for the government, but that money was transferred to a company that belongs to the president's brother. So those are the allegations.
The billions of dollars that are going as royalties for this gas deal. Now, why is that peculiar? Why is that an issue that has been taken up?
Actually, the BBC report spoke to experts who said that this is unheard of and it's something that has never been seen in the industry to pay such royalties. So now the question here in Senegal actually basically is, I mean, we are not getting that much out of this company. How come this person who doesn't, like, who's just a businessman will end up having this amount of money out of this field that belongs to the Senegalese people? So the other outcry about the whole issue is this, the benefit that Frontinus will reportedly get out of the royalties, apart from the fact that the other issue is the president's brother. So there are two issues here that are concerning for most people.
You know, considering the fact that Timis is going to get 9 to 12 billion, how much would the state of Senegal, the people of Senegal, get during that same year, or do we know?
I don't have that information. What I saw in the media is that the company is expected to make 7 billion. Out of that period. So I'm not sure how much of that percentage the Senegalese people are going to get from that.
And the opposition now in Senegal has called for an investigation into the BP deal. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's not just the opposition, but many people are calling for what I would term civil society. Some people in the civil society are also calling for an investigation into this issue. And some people are saying that the National Assembly should open an investigation on this. And some people are going as far as saying that the prosecutor actually should take it upon himself to open an investigation, because this has to do with billions of dollars that could benefit the Senegalese people, and it's a national issue. So what the state should do is, you know, don't wait for anyone to sue or take it upon themselves to investigate this case. And there's a petition that was launched, I think, yesterday, late night. The last time I checked, there were more than 10,000 people that signed the petition asking for an investigation to be opened.
That was AFRI activist member Aisha Dabo. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. More than 2,000 cases of the Ebola virus have hit the Democratic Republic of Congo, according to the nation's health ministry. The 1,346 deaths make it the second deadliest Ebola outbreak in history. On Monday, the Ministry of Health says just 539 people have been cured of the virus. The ministry update says the fight against the deadly virus is being helped by improved security and a containment of the disease. That is it for this Wednesday, June 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a lovely day.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscast covering Africa News. Tune in on the top of each hour 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.
voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 22:30 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.